WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
I think this would qualify as my first Susan Vega. That's what it said on the thing. I walked in there. Okay, a little behind
the
scenes.
No, that's not true, is it?
It's Suzanne Vega, yeah.
Oh, my bad.
I walked in there and I said, isn't there a famous song about my name is Luca? And Stiz, Mr. Music's like, I've never heard of it. And I was like, Google it. There is.
Right.
And the first line is, my name is Luca. I remember
uncalled
this.
Uncalled for.
Good job.
This is my first deep pull rejoin.
Thank God, too.
It was a long road to get to Luca Garza, who is the Celtics' newest big man, formerly of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and our boy Dan Ball tells me that the more Luka plays, the better he gets, which is good, because when I look at the Celtics' big men post Kristaps Porzingis, post
bad.
Luke Kornet, and probably post Al Horford, my name is Luka could be their starting big man, and I'm not sure how good that's going to work out. He's apparently a bit of a defensive liability. Our boy Brian Ferzocco. Yeah.
He'll fit in alongside Simons and everyone else.
Well, Brian Ferzocco just said, you think Anthony Simons doesn't play defense? Wait till you see this guy.
Well, what the hell is the point of a big guy if he doesn't play defense and he's not an offensive threat?
That's a fair question. And we do naturally think that because you're tall, you should be a defensive presence, a rim protector. We saw that second to last game they played. You know, I like to call it the JB game because he had 12 assists, but that was also when Luke Kornet went off, right? Didn't he have like 7 blocks? He was like double. He was like doing the right hand and the left hand block.
He made himself literally $41 million with like the Luke Kornet game.
And I don't begrudge him.
He had a great year.
He did, but that was the cherry on top of the sundae.
To me, just real quick on the Luke Kornet. Look, they're going to miss him. I love what he was turning into be, the player he was turning into be. And San Antonio, that's such a San Antonio Spurs move right there.
You like
that's
that?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I love that. Are you?
Yeah.
Dude, he's a very skilled basketball player, Luke. Make fun of him all you want.
Are you out of your mind?
Go ahead, Ted. Call me out. But he is that guy
you,
is a – I would love him to be my backup center anytime.
He's a good player on a good team. I agree with that.
Like, but if Popovich wants him, you know that tells the Celtics, like, because Brad Stevens worships at the altar of Pop, Andy, you know that basically says, like, they see in him what we see in him. Damn it, they just had more money available.
You know what he does for a lot of big men don't want to do? He'll set screens constantly. He's a great passer. He knows spacing. He gets the hell out of the way.
Well, Tatum loved him. They fell in love with the pick and roll lobs late in the year.
Yeah, a lot of big men don't want to do that.
Yeah, no.
Oh, man, when they would play inside and pass the basketball, and you know, and also it's tough to also hate on this element, guys. He really is like an ultimate success story. Guy goes from like the G League to the bench to world champion to now getting paid tens of millions of dollars to play basketball in one of the top markets. Like, you can't hate on that.
No, you can't hate on that. But I would say that's the trend nowadays. These guys coming into the NBA are you know, 19, 20 years old. They play 1 year of college, and they need 3 years of development in the G League. And then you hear about them.
I actually think I'm not as big a Luke Kornet fan as you are. I think we're probably going to forget a little bit about Luke Kornet in a while. And I think
not by watching Luka Garza.
Well, we'll see.
In my opinion.
the genius that is Brad Stevens, right? This is the guy. He was ready like this. As soon as Luke Kornet was gone, this is the guy he had decided was the next guy I want, Luka. He replaced a Luke with a Luka. And we've been talking about this. Nobody thought Derek White was as good as he is. And Brad Stevens said, Derek White's my guy.
Yeah.
And he brings him in here. Maybe. Am I being overly optimistic here? Because I'll tell you what is overly optimistic, Dan Ball. I just got to the second line of the rundown under the stats you put for Luka Garza. Career points per minute in NBA playoff history. Luka Garza, 0.93.
I love it.
Second, Michael Jordan, 0.80. Third, LeBron James, 0.69. So he's the greatest scorer in the history of the postseason.
In the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah,
obviously.
Well done, Dan Ball. What's up?
Can I double down on that?
Sure.
Luka Garza was named the Sporting News Player of the Year for the second year in a row in college in 2021, becoming the first repeat winner since Michael Jordan in 1983 and 1984.
Wow,
Luke, you're such a Belichickian move, Mike, and that's how Brad Stevens operates when he's doing his best work. So this could be an attempt, Andy, at low cost, considering that they're inching closer and closer to said second apron, and they don't want to go there. To this could be one of those diamond in the rough efforts.
Could be.
I mean, or, you know, that and the fact that they got the best passing big man in the draft head in Amari Williams, like, there could be some upside with the big dudes this year.
Could be, or it might not go very well. I will say, though, you like Luke Kornet. A lot of people did, especially late in the year when they were getting the lobs.
He's better than Luke Garza.
I would add this to the a lot of guys that fans really liked are no longer members of the Boston Celtics. Jrue Holiday, very popular on and off the court. Kristaps Porzingis might have been the most popular Celtic for a portion of time here. And I do think Luke Kornet had a kind of cult, passionate following.
He was so awkwardly funny.
Yes. Yeah. And
he was doing the karaoke and everything. Yeah. Like, he's a personality.
Little funny celebrations after you make a good play.
And not that that matters. I mean, if you go win 55 games, everybody will be happy you won 55 games. But I will, if you win 41 games and you're less likable, that'll all be wrapped up.
Both of the stars on this team, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, honestly, on the court, have zero personality. Zero. So anybody that stands out, other, you know, that's not them, it has personality that is good, and we... You know, and we like their game. They're going to be stars in this town.
Speaking of Jaylen Brown, I'm starting to get worried for my guy.
You're unbelievable. I heard you driving down, I'm like, they're putting too much on his broad shoulders.
Dude, give me a break.
Wait, hold on.
This.
If you're number one,
you need all these people to carry you, bro?
Well, I don't know. Jason Tatum needed Jaylen Brown to carry him to a title.
Give me a break. They came in together pretty much.
Him, but you don't believe that they're sort of because we've talked about, Ted, that we're going to get an answer on JB.
Are they disrespecting JB?
No,
is that what you're saying?
They're making his job really tough. They're tearing the team down around
him. They don't like him.
No.
They're putting too much work on Jaylen Brown.
I don't think that's it, and you're putting a tone to that I did not insinuate. I'm just saying people like you may look at failures of the Boston Celtics next year and say it's all on Jaylen Brown, and I'll say, wait a minute, you got rid of Al Horford, Kristaps Porzingis.
So we can't even judge Jaylen Brown next year.
You've
already determined, no matter what, it's not Jaylen Brown's fault.
That's fair. That's 100%
fair. They're tearing the team down around him and expecting him to carry it.
We already lost our best player. Now you want Jaylen Brown to step up. Okay, fine. I'm sure he could do it. But now you've taken away a lot of the other weapons that he had. So, you have a point.
But it's a reset year, Stiz. This is the year the team needs to recalibrate and figure who the next level of, or the next layer, I should say, of contributors to surround the team. Like, you can't just win with two max contract, two star players. They tried doing that for the longest time and kept running into the Eastern Conference Finals wall. They need more. This is the kind of year you need to reset. And I actually want to revisit the idea that on this program, people keep bandying about so freely. They are like, oh, this is a 3 or 4 seed for sure. You guys sure about that?
I'm no longer
sure about that?
I mean, nobody's knows, but I mean, that's the odds got them right now at the 4th best team in the East.
And I still think they're going to be a good team. But Stiz, you and I may be the voices of reason on this show.
Oh, dear Lord.
You can.
Oh, the show is doomed then.
Why even watch next year? If it's
Oh, it's going to be interesting. No.
Why?
I actually think the opposite.
I'll
tell you what.
Excuses for it, no matter what.
Well,
because
I know you are going to, whenever it goes wrong, people are going to pile on JB when the totality
of
the team is changed.
Exactly. And Nick just called it a reset year. And so that's what I was going to say. So if next year doesn't go well and Jaylen Brown isn't able to be Superman and literally be the one and only guy that gets it done, just remember that you're the same guy that was like, well, it's a reset year.
Now,
and not Jaylen Brown sucks.
I also have to be fair, because I will admit that if the roles were reversed and JB was out for the year and Jason Tatum was still in his spot as a number one, and they took away Jrue Holiday and they took away Al Horford, and I would say, oh, I thought you were Jason Tatum. I thought you were the best basketball player in the world.
So,
what's the matter?
Go.
You couldn't handle the situation?
That's amazing. How you just pretty much argue against yourself all the time.
I like to paint the entire picture here on WEEI Afternoons. Be objective. Up next, we need to talk about my guy, JB, because I posted a poll yesterday. Ted, you know I like to put polls on Twitter and get a sort of temperature of the fan base, and yesterday's was about all these rumors that continue that JB could still maybe be traded. Are there still offers out there, Sacramento Kings and others? So we'll talk about JB's future leading the Boston Celtics or another team and how fans would react if there was a trade for, say, I don't know, you ever heard of Giannis? A little Giannis-JB talk next year on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Oh, Giannis isn't happy. What are we going
to
do?
I feel like Giannis is never happy. He's got a little Andy Hart to him.
After he won his... Is that a little bit?
Maybe that's why you hate him so much.
Perpetual state of just miserable. Yeah.
I get you guys confused for each other all the time.
Yeah.
Easy to, huh?
Yes.
I'm in control. But do you believe that he's not happy? Because, like, there's two things. There's only two ways for me to read this, the Dame Lillard situation. And either you ran it by Giannis because he's your MVP player and you're like, here's the plan. We do this. We can do this. Bring in Miles Turner. Whatever. Or you didn't run it by Giannis because you might be shipping his ass out of town next and you're in a total rebuild mode in Milwaukee.
Yeah, perhaps.
Right? One or the other.
I don't know. These NBA stars, I think they feel they are entitled to almost be the key decision makers of these organizations. I think it's the player empowerment has gone way too far to me to the player side in the NBA. At first, I used to respect it and like it. I thought, this is awesome. But now it's almost gotten to be too much. Hey, Giannis, can I do this before
I got I'm the GM, but I have to ask you.
Is it okay if I make this trade? Yeah.
That's the reality.
I know.
They have all the power with that CBA.
Yeah.
As you continue to see, like SGA, you don't think his power went up when he signed a $71 million a year extension today? Oh, like man. Sam Presti's like, oh, that's
yeah, but
a
is,
lot.
Is Giannis not happy that they got Miles Turner over freaking Lopez? Me and Frazoco were talking about this. Give me Miles Turner over Brook Lopez any day of the week.
I know it's not, you know, a piece that fits in their current reality, but if you told me they let go of Kristaps Porzingis but replaced him with Miles Turner,
forget it.
I would have been all in.
Why
on
weren't
the Celtics.
Celtics in on that?
I just money. He got $27 million, and you're trying to stay under the apron and that whole thing.
Love his game.
Yeah, me too. I have wanted him to be a Celtic for probably 8 years, 10 years, something like that. But he is not. JB is currently a Celtic, but the trade rumors won't go away. We even had the Sacramento Kings as like an actual name team that might be interested. And would Sabonis be in the deal? Would it be a bunch of first round picks? What would it be? So as part of that, and I've heard a lot of people recently just say Giannis, you know, could the Celtics trade Jaylen Brown to the Bucks for Giannis? Would you want Giannis? But whatever, the Jaylen Brown trade rumors persisted. So yesterday, for the show poll I did at Jumbo Heart and at WEEI Afternoons, Celtics fans, what would your reaction be to a potential Jaylen Brown trade, assuming a relatively fair market return? Because obviously I don't know what the exact deal would be, first round picks, players. And the options I put were happy, meh, or pissed. And well over 1,000 people voted, and happy was 18%. So I don't know what you mean by that. We'll talk about that in a minute. Put a pin in it. Meh response got 31%, and 51% of Celtics fans would be pissed if they traded Jaylen Brown. Ted Johnson, a lot of faces, a lot of noise. What's your reaction?
I mean, that's basically 49% of people that would be happy or meh.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big number. Like
you,
that
you
is
spun that in a direction I don't like.
Are you kidding me? Like, if you think you being a Jaylen Brown fan that's all of a sudden validates your fandom form, you're out of your mind. That's unbelievable that 50% are happy or meh with the fact that JB would be traded for equal value. I just don't think he resonates like even close to what Jason Tatum does here.
82% would be upset to see him go, or not happy to see him go, if you mix the numbers a different way, because the meh could be clamped into the pissed. So it all depends how you
meh is indifferent. Nothing's worse than indifference is not good.
No, indifference is generally not good, especially not in this business when we're talking about teams. When fans become indifferent about teams, that is bad for.
Dude, I'd be curious what that poll was if it was Jason Tatum instead of Jaylen Brown.
Like,
what would the response be?
Ooh.
Yeah. Now,
it wouldn't even come close to being the same results. Well,
but would people take into account the relatively fair market value? Because in theory, Jason Tatum would bring back more, right? He's thought of as a better player. He's 4 years in a row all NBA. So, you know, that would have to be taken into account there. But, I thought it was interesting that 51% would be pissed if you traded Jaylen Brown. And I also think that might just be a one-year thing because people have decided what we've talked about. Jaylen Brown is going to be the centerpiece of the Celtics. I'm going to watch. I'm going to get an answer on how good Jaylen Brown is. I think they've sort of already bought into the narrative of the season and what the story of this season is going to be. And now you change all that, and what do you get in return? Fitzy, would you trade Jaylen Brown for Giannis?
In a heartbeat.
That
trade, already before you tried to spell out Antetokounmpo, I would take him. I'd take his brother. I would take all the rest of everything else Milwaukee wants to unload. Yes. He's because Andy, Jaylen Brown on any given night can be your complete all-around superstar player. Giannis is a dominant force. That is like he is literally just like a gravitational pull around which an entire team, a game plan needs to be dedicated toward. Like he is it. I'm not going to say him because I can't stand that expression, but he is it. I'd do it. And I would do the Sabonis trade if there were some complimentary players or some picks thrown in as well, because I happen to love Sabonis' game as well.
Sabonis,
20 points a night, 14 rebounds, hell yeah.
Huh?
That's from the Kings. I have no
interest. Why is that being reported?
That he could be a part of a package that could be traded from Sacramento for Jaylen Brown.
I'm a huge fan of the Sabonis game. But let me ask you this. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So you're all in on Giannis. Are you all in on Giannis and JT? Or Giannis and JB?
Oh, Giannis and JT would be awesome. Oh,
you think that would work? You think that's a better fit than JB?
I do. Because I just don't know what JB's fit is, Ted. Like, I know he can be a lot of different things to your team any given night, but I know what Jason Tatum's fit is and how his style of play works. And I just feel like maybe, just maybe, they would be able to finesse an inside-out game between the two of them that would be veritably unstoppable. I think it didn't work with Dame Lillard, and it should have. And I would love to get to the bottom of that, but I think they would be amazing.
I think it would be
one of the worst
fit.
Pairings in the history of NBA superstardom duos.
I'd love to find out.
I think Giannis wants to play at 100 miles an hour downhill, get to the rim, and Jason Tatum's walking the ball up. I think it would, unless you did almost
one shoots a lot of threes, one
none
is scared to death of shooting a three.
Unless you broke it up and played like and almost didn't play him on the court a lot together, and you had like two different styles, offenses, whatever. I don't think it would fit. I think there's a better chance actually JB and Giannis would work together. I think they both would love to run and gun and dunk and be aggressive and be physical offensively.
I agree.
So, but I also don't really like Giannis, and I don't really want to see him as a member of my Boston Celtics. And you know why, in part, because I don't want to see JB sent out the door. And I am what I just talked about. I have sold myself on, I'm going to get to find out this year how good JB is. Regardless of what's going on around him, he is the centerpiece of the show that is the Boston Celtics this year. And I think to some degree, Brad Stevens has said that. I mean, he referenced a lot of times, even the first press conference we heard right after the season, JT and JB are still our pillars, whatever. And then more recently, a lot of teams would like to have this core. And he said JB with Peyton Pritchard and Derek White.
So just to be clear, JB is still, you still can learn from him. No. Even though they're getting rid of good players and they're putting more pressure on him, you will still be able to find out something about him, even with JT off the court, regardless of the quality of teammates he has around him.
Yes, because one of the maybe the worst case scenario from a fan perspective for the team as a whole is they might not win a lot of games. Let's say they're a 37-win team. But in that scenario, my guess is JB has a career high in points because he's just the guy trying to score every night, and he'll have the games where he puts up 35 or 40.
I have no problem with that as long as he's not taking 22 shots a night to do it.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I think you're good. But you know, so I may get a season where the product as the team is less entertaining, but JB fluffs up his numbers and puts up numbers that make him more of a second-team All-NBA player. Oh, he did it by himself up in Boston this year. He averaged 29.7 points per game without Tatum, without Porzingis, whatever. I think that's a possibility. Although I will say I do legitimately wonder if they're trying to put too much on him. And maybe that end of the Knicks series was sort of a dichotomy of what next year is going to be. One game really good, and he was able to shoulder the load. The next game, he tried to shoulder too much of the load, couldn't do it, and it was a bit of a debacle. And that could be the Celtics 2025-26 season.
That's where I'm leaning.
JB is still a Celtic, and I'm going to enjoy that as long as I can. Wiggy, you have a lead this morning?
I do. Good morning, everybody. And Chime, if this is the last show, we got to make sure we get a little Boys to Men. It's so hard to say goodbye.
You got it.
That always tugs on the heartstrings.
Yes, it does.
So, yesterday my phone was going off the hook, probably between, I don't know, 4 and 9 p.m. with your boy Shams.
Oh, you and I might have a similar lead here.
Okay.
I may have to jump on board. Go ahead.
All right. So my lead is this.
Oh, do I need to sign a waiver to jump on board with a lead, Curtis?
Yes.
Okay.
So please keep both feet on the ground.
Does anybody ever drown in a foot of water?
Yes. Oh, that does happen.
Oh, it does happen.
Well, yeah. Jackson almost did in the shower.
Yeah,
that's true. All
right, well, we could just get them to stand up and they should be all right.
Yeah.
Your Boston Celtics team of 2025, I thought it was going to look a little bit different.
Different.
This thing is going to look mad different.
So we haven't spoken about it yet.
No.
But Luke Kornet has signed a three-year deal. I thought it was three for $41
million. Was it three? I thought it was four.
For $41
million. Yep, with the Spurs.
What a come up for him, by the way.
Good for the murder hornet.
Undrafted.
Yep.
And making $1 million or whatever he was making with the Celtics. And he ends up getting 10 M's a year, as Aaron Rodgers would say. So he's gone.
He's a gonzo. And it looks like Big Al's probably going to be gonzo, too.
It sounds like he's going to be playing for Golden State.
Yes,
Al Horford.
Yeah, there are a couple teams that are interested in him. And all the teams that are interested.
Throwing a bag at him.
Yep, and all the teams that are interested in him are teams that have a legit chance of being in the NBA Finals. And Golden State, Greg, like you said, is one of those teams. So your 2025 Celtics, the only guys that you'll look at coming back that had, like, you know, if a significant role or like a good role will be Jaylen Brown, Pete Pritch, Derek White, and if Sam Hauser.
You basically have, you know, from my perspective, I love Peyton Pritchard, but you have Jaylen Brown and you have Derek White.
Yep.
And then you throw George's Yang in there.
Gaza.
So, can I ask a question? I heard Mego say this with Jones yesterday. She was in for Keefe, and she was saying how, like, this isn't a fire sale. Like, this is a private equity hedge fund whatever guy coming in and offloading cash. Like, why are we giving, like, everybody is leaving. They traded two of their highest paid players.
Yep.
And then they created a fake story with Gary Washburn saying that they would have retained everyone if Jason Tatum was healthy.
Well, guys like Luke Kornet and Al Horford are just going to get a bag. They're not the Celtics aren't like selling them off.
No, well, how has their offseason been? How much money have they retained? How much have they shed?
Yeah, I understand, Curtis, that they've shed a lot in terms of this trade, especially for Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis. But like with
and they
guys like
retained players
again with Luke Kornet and Al Horford, they're not going to pay them out the butt just because they want to keep them on the team.
Okay, but they have determined that next season is a throwaway.
It looks like it.
Do you agree with that?
I mean, a little bit, but at the same time, you still got Anfernee Simons back in the Jrue Holiday trade. Like, he's going to play.
They're shopping Anfernee Simons.
That's what Mego was telling me.
For now,
they're going to flip him.
We'll see.
So, but if they are shopping him, then there's a good chance that they flip him, and so now you don't even have
who's your big Xavier Tillman,
Luca Graza, or whatever the guy they signed yesterday.
Is it Angeli?
I don't know. It's Kata.
Curtis, that's Nemus. Not nice. It's what?
Nemus Kata?
Yeah. So my lead, your perfect lead into my lead. If you're going, you might as well, if you're going to get rid of everybody else, you might as well, from my perspective, deal Jaylen Brown.
Okay.
And so who would you be willing to deal him for? Like, who are the players?
All right.
Giannis?
Giannis is one.
I would as well.
Damn, there was another player that his name. Oh, the guy in Sacramento, Sabonis' kid. Would you deal? I don't know what his first name is, but the Sacramento big
Sabonis is his last name. DeMontis.
DeMontis Sabonis.
I would imagine that Sabonis' kid's last name is Sabonis.
No, I knew his last
Jimmy
name.
Jimmy Butler.
No, I wouldn't deal Jaylen Brown for
you
Jimmy.
Wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't do him for just Sabonis either.
Yeah, but I don't think it would just
the
be Sabonis.
Disrespect
well,
from you,
Courtney. I'm sorry, it's business.
No,
it's business. It's kind of things are. You can't let the personal get involved. You can love a place, like a place you work.
Right.
You love the people around you, but it's business.
Yeah. Oh.
Business, baby.
Bam Adebayo.
People let you down. It's business.
Bam Adebayo.
I stand on business.
You stand on business?
I stand on business.
Yeah, make sure you say business.
I stand for the people who are loyal to this show.
That's all you can do.
And have given us a lot of time. That's what I stand on. But
it's all about loyalty. Bam Adebayo was another one.
Would you? I would not. I would.
That's
not.
A tough one. I think not just Bam by himself. Maybe Bam and you know a couple other pieces. The same with Sabonis.
Bam, Bam.
but no, I think that if you're the Celtics, you have to be. Or do you say we keep Jaylen Brown and we trade Derek White, which then you know you're still making your team worse. And you
well, reportedly, they laughed at an offer they got for Derek White around draft time.
Okay.
For like the ninth overall pick.
The ninth overall pick, I don't know about that.
Do you think that you talk a lot about Bill Chisholm, the new owner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they look at the finals this year and look at a team, whether it's OKC or you look at the Pacers and you look at teams that don't, that when it comes to payroll and mm-hmm. superstars,
right.
they're not paying a bunch of max guys, and they look at it and go, all right, that's the intention of the second apron,
mm-hmm.
and we want to be, you know, we want to follow the NFL model where you got a whole bunch of guys that are, you know, not making giant amounts of money. Like,
right, but I
think... that you think they look at it and say you can win that way in the NBA.
But I think that's going to change real quick because Jalen Williams out in OKC, he's about to get a max deal. Did SGA get his max contract?
I'll double check.
Yeah, and if he didn't, he's going to get a max deal. So they're going to be looking at Chet Holmgren is going to get some type of max deal. So they're going to.
He hasn't gotten it yet, Wiggy, but he is eligible for a potential extension worth up to $380 million over the next 5 years.
Yes, so he's going to get his max. And I think Jalen Williams is a free agent this year, so he's going to get the max deal. I'll give you the Indiana Pacers. They were able to kind of do it with nobody really like, you know, where you look at it and go, okay, they don't really have a max guy. Tyrese Halliburton is their best player. So I can give you the Pacers.
No, but to make it clear, there is not going to be a roadmap where teams have no max guys and are championship
right.
contenders. That
right.
is Indiana Pacers are the anomaly.
Yeah. Most teams are going to have two.
But yeah, I'm not saying that that's the way to be, Curtis. I'm just saying I wonder if they look at it that way. And Wick Grosbeck on this show, famously when we were at Wachusett Mountain, said no team is going to be in the second apron for more than a season or more than 2 years
right.
or whatever.
Odd team to buy if you don't like max deals.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and I'm with Curtis on this one, the Pacers are like, you know, they're an anomaly when it comes to that because if you look at what the Knicks are trying to do, they're trying their best to get Giannis, and now there's rumors that they might even try to get LeBron. So you're going to need that you're going to need those two max guys, and the Celtics have their guys right now in Jaylen and Jason, but unfortunately, Jason is hurt. So
okay, Wiggy, thank you.
Let's get to the Celtics, what they're up to. Al Horford, at last check, still a free agent. Is that actually a good sign for the C's? And it turns out they have potential interest in Damian Lillard. How would he work here? We'll get to all that next.
What if I'm the Boston Celtics and I sign? No, no.
He's not doing Boston.
He doesn't want any part of Boston. Okay. All right.
I don't see that. Dude.
Okay. So you can confidently report that Dame would not want to go to Boston. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I was thinking Jaylen Brown and maybe something to Portland, and then you get Dame Lillard.
So that's from a few years ago. Chris Haynes on with Dan Patrick discussing the idea of trading for Damian Lillard. So maybe things have changed, Mego. But currently, according to The Athletic, the Celtics are showing interest in Dame Lillard. 2 years ago, he didn't sound very interested in coming here. Again, now he's been cut loose by the Bucks. He's not the same player he was even before this injury. Now he's going to be coming off an Achilles injury on a similar timeline to Tatum and Halliburton. Should the Celtics be interested on Dame Lillard? Or interested in signing Dame Lillard if he's even open to potentially coming here? Because, again, the reporting is they're showing interest in him, not the other way around.
Yeah, they should definitely be interested. You always kick the tires, even when he's coming off an Achilles injury. And I've been on the record that I don't love undersized guards and how they age, especially when they're on the Celtics. Just not a good track record
for
them. Yeah,
true. Isaiah, Kemba.
It's tough. It's a tough grind. But if it's something where it's such a low pay that, like, the risk is so low, you'd basically be taking a flyer on him. I don't know why you wouldn't.
So here's what I wouldn't like about it. And I'm not saying I'd, like, kick and scream. You get him on a veteran's minimum deal, and I bet he'll go for more. But if you get him on, like, a minimal deal, I'm not going to kick and scream about it. But I don't like what it represents. It would represent we're more worried about 2 years down the line than this year. And we're more worried about Tatum in 2 years than trying to do anything this year.
Isn't that already the reality,
well,
though?
Probably, but I like to think they're going to at least try to give it a good, honest run this year and see what you can do with Jalen as a number one. And if they go below the luxury tax, forget aprons. If they dip below the luxury tax and they sign Damian Lillard just to rehab with Tatum and come back in 2 years, I just don't like what that represents. I don't like punting on a year when you have an all-star in Jaylen Brown, finals MVP.
All-NBA.
You have an all-NBA player, thank you. You have Derek White, who's been all-defense and been on Team USA. You have two other guys who, according to the Ringer's top 100 rankings, are in the top 100. Count those for whatever they are, in Simons and Pritchard. Like, I feel like you have enough talent to have a representative year next year and be in the mix in the Eastern Conference. And so I'd worry more about adding to this year's team than building 2 years from now.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if it happens. Again, you have to show interest. Yeah, I mean, you this is a former all-star. Again, he's got a terrible injury. He's in a situation where maybe you can get him for dirt cheap. And so you look at it, but he also doesn't solve the biggest problem, not to have a pun there, but the biggest problem on your roster still, which is who's going to be your starting center. Celtics have been in this position for years at this point where they've got plenty of guards. Like, their guard depth is unmatched most seasons, but they need somebody who's going to be a starting center. And right now, the best shot that you're looking at is probably Namias Keita. And so I'd be more interested because they're going to try to move some of this stuff against the cap. Like, they're back slightly over the second apron. I just don't really see a world in which they stay in that position. And they still need a starting center. So there's going to be a lot more moves to come. And I'm still going to be surprised if Anthony Simons is here on the team to start the season.
I do want him here. Now, again, tell me what the return is.
I like him as a player. It's just such a big contract.
Yeah, but
it's for 1 year. It's $27.7 million against the cap.
Yeah. So they're back in the second apron right now, right? Yeah. With the Minot signing and the Garza signing.
Yes. Well, and also what they got back.
Yeah, right. Simons and Niang. Yeah, so there are other pieces you could spin off. Maybe that's Hauser, maybe that's Niang. I would like to hang on to Simons personally. I thought that was a good return for Jrue Holiday. The other moves, not so much. Does it tell you anything that Al Horford is still a free agent? And put another way, the Warriors and Lakers are reportedly in on Horford and showing a lot of interest, and he's probably gone. I acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it's dragging out and it didn't happen right away, like Cornette happened right away, or it happened right away with Horford the first time he came here, when he left Atlanta, the first time he left to go to Philly, it happened early. Is there any chance the tugging of the heartstrings, or they're working on a way to get Horford back, and that's the delay and why he hasn't signed anywhere?
Maybe it just is so misaligned, like, with what the Celtics are right now. And again, I know you want them to focus on the upcoming season, but Horford's 39 years old. He's going to be looking for a contract that is probably somewhat similar to the $9 million AAV that he had last season. And when you have two teams out west who are probably considering themselves contenders in the Lakers and the Warriors, those two teams, it's tough to look at that and say, I'm going to take probably a pay cut or something similar when those two teams might be in a bidding war to stay with a team that is maybe, like, best case scenario, a fourth seed in the East. I'm trying not to be too negative about it because I think there is a possibility that he could say, hey, I'm just going to finish out my career. I get a 2-year deal. Tatum comes back in 26. We make a serious run at it then. That's a possibility. I just think when you have so many teams involved that are really going for it next year out west, like, it's kind of a tough sell.
I think he's probably gone. I just the fact he hasn't signed yet makes me wonder, are they working on something to bring him back?
WEEI Afternoons on a Monday afternoon at Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Hurry in for your last chance to get employee pricing for all during the Great American Sales Event. You got to hurry for that. You also got to hurry because it's time for Dan Ball's favorite segment, the 3-point stance.
319!
19!
Yeah, there you go. I think what's that?
It's the 3-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bang!
Easy as 1, 2, 3.
Pasternak, a hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone. A 3-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
I maintain that my favorite segment is always the Quizmas Days. Might be Andy's More Likely, though.
Well, I do like More Likely.
Yeah, yeah, it's growing on me a little bit.
I heard there's going to be a Fitzy 5 today at 5:30.
Yeah, but no one likes it. I mean, what?
Boy. Okay. Today's 3-point stance. That's what it's time for here on WEEI Afternoons. Just awkward enough. And it's brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or you're standing between Hart and Fitzy right now, you got to get Glassman, and you can call all sevens at 617-777-7777. As it is 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, we have three hosts, each of which will present their stance on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Each host will get 60 seconds to present their opening stance, after which we will open up for discussion on each. I've pulled a move that I did not ask permission for, but I'm doing it anyways. Whoa. I've called in a celebrity for my 3-point stance here today.
Tom Hanks?
Yes, as a matter of fact, with assistance from Joe Kelly. Our order today is Andy Hart and then Nick Fitzy Stevens, and then from WEEI, WEEI.com, and Jones and Keefe. My man, Justin Turpin.
Surprise.
Wow.
What's up, Turp?
What's up, guys?
Turp. How are we doing? It's a Turp Chirp. I love it.
Yes, that's what it is.
How you doing, man?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, what's up? Do you feel like, are you in your element right now with the NBA free agency coming up, the trades happening, or do you feel a little lost because the Celtics haven't played meaningful basketball in over a month?
It feels crazy that it's already been like 50 days since they played a meaningful basketball game.
That's unbelievable.
Like, it feels like it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited to get some action in this offseason here.
Excuse me?
I'm going to need some.
Aren't we all?
I'm going to need some core. Yeah, please.
Amen.
Once you're 50, forget it. I'm going to need some cornet talk.
I love it. I'm all for cornet talk. That's the big topic right now.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. That is our order. Andy Hart, since you are so impatient, are you ready?
I am indeed.
All right, your 60 seconds, Stiz, begin right now.
So you were very excited about the pitching matchup tonight.
I was.
And Bradford was too. Did you hear him? Oh, first round pick from a year ago on the mound against Crochet. You know what? There's a big show tonight here at Fenway Park, but to me, it's in the dugouts. Tito Francona leading the Cincinnati Reds into town against Alex Cora. I think the two greatest Red Sox managers in the history of the organization, because they are modern managers. So I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt. I know they're, you told me, Dan Ball, second and third on the wins list for the team. But to me, managing baseball in Boston in the year 2000 and beyond is a massive challenge. Think about sort of the history that's gone through that. You're not just chasing championships. You're not just battling the Yankees. You have general managers that are leaving the organizations in gorilla suits. You just have beer and chicken and media and the Boston Globe writing schmear pieces and hit pieces and all these things. It is a horrific job, honestly. You're going to age exponentially in that job. We saw it happen to Tito. He got worn down. He got run out of town. We are now, I think, in the wearing down of Cora, maybe run him out of town soon phase of things. But tonight, two very likable, affable, smart baseball men will be going head-to-head at Fenway Park. The two greatest managers in the history of this organization. Tito Francona, woo, won the World Series. Alex Cora, woo, won the World Series.
Woo. All right. The Homer Honk speaks. He earned it. All right, we'll discuss. We'll get into
thoughts?
That in just a moment.
Oh, he's such a homer. He's such a
cynical,
homer.
Negative bum.
Oh, I mean, whoa, boy.
There is a manager with like 400 more wins than either one of them. But
yeah, you looked it up.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, but you didn't know him until you looked it up.
I mean, I know the name. I know his number's retired. I did not know how much better he was than everybody.
What about Morgan Magic? What about Johnny Mack? What about Dick
Morgan Williams? Magic was fun. That's fun. McNair was fun. Yeah, that one strike away was great.
Was it his fault that Calvin Charlie spit the bit that Bob Stanley threw that ball away? Actually, it was his fault. Should have had Dave Stapleton at first.
He did play a role in that. So
he did.
I'm just telling you, you got a couple guys with rings and that I think did great jobs under very difficult circumstances in the pack tonight.
All right. We'll put our pin in that because Fitzy, your time is now. Are you ready?
Oh, why not?
All right. Well, your 60 seconds and that positive attitude continue right now.
All right. Well, time to talk a little football on this afternoon program. Bucky Brooks at NFL.com, one of their finest writers, put up a piece today about some dark horse candidates for MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, and more in the 2025 NFL calendar. Some fun names out there like Baker Mayfield, Josh Jacobs, Will Anderson on Houston, and R.J. Harvey, the running back in Denver, to which I would like to say, yes, all of those are valid candidates possibly for many awards in the upcoming NFL season. However, Patriots fans, do not feel excluded. Do not feel left out because, in my estimation this year, and I don't think this is Hot Take Central population me, you do have people like Christian Gonzalez, who very well could find himself in the defensive player of the year contention. You have people like Christian Barmore, who I believe could very well be a comeback player of the year candidate. And if he is able to keep up with the positive upward trajectory that he's been on since he was drafted in the second round, 38th overall in the 2025 draft, you could have people like my guy, Travion Henderson, entering the offensive rookie of the year chat as well. So Pats fans, while everyone likes to make noise about everyone else and their fancy players, take heart. You may have a couple of keepers there yourself. Whoa, and I got out half a second early.
That's what she said.
Okay.
I don't even know what that means, and why did she say it?
I have thoughts.
Really?
I do.
Perfect.
But
all
I
right.
can save them until the Terp Man chirps in.
Well, it's an honor to have you for your first 3 points.
My pleasure.
So
nervous?
No, I'm ready
Turpin
to go.
Style.
I've never done one of these, so I am worried about messing up the timing, though.
Yeah.
Oh, don't. Ted sometimes does 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, and sometimes, if we're being honest, Stiz forgets to start the clock, and you don't actually have a buzzer.
Yeah, once it gets, once that, beeping gets louder and louder.
And then sometimes Andy yells at the clock, and the funny thing is time has no feelings.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
It's very true.
All right, Turp, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Stiz, his 60 seconds begin right now.
Go.
Does it come now? Does it...
Yeah, go!
Oh, all right. So, as we know, it's going to be worse.
Oh, sorry, Turp.
I thought I was going to
thank you very much.
Like,
there's some turtle wax and rice-a-roni for you at the door. All right, let's restart. Right, your time begins now.
Yeah. All right, as we know, it's already been a very busy offseason for the Celtics, parting ways with two members of a starting lineup from a championship team, and it's only going to get busier. That's why we're in here today. That's why Dan brought me in. NBA free agency begins tonight, so... The job for Brad Stevens and the new ownership group led by Bill Chisholm is only going to get harder. And a big name that we've seen floating around as a potential trade candidate is Sam Hauser. He's entering the first year of his four-year, $45 million extension, making a very manageable $10 million for the first 2 years before it jumps to $11 and $12 million. So he's been a common trade target, and I don't think that should be the case for the Celtics. When you look at what he's been able to do for this team, obviously developing from Maine, that's a cool story, but it has nothing to do with it. He was a plus 10 net rating this year, was fourth among reserves that played at least 60 games. If you're looking at this as the gap year it was, with Tatum, the lineups with Jason Tatum and Sam Hauser were plus 12.2 net rating, one of the best on the team. He's never shot below 40% in the NBA, high school, or college. He's an unbelievable floor spacer. It's tough to find that consistency at that value. So I think there are other ways. The Celtics obviously have more moves to get to. That threw me off there. Need $4.5 million under. So Anthony Simons, George Niang, those are ones that you can move off. I would keep Sam Hauser from the Boston Celtics.
All right. Well done, timing.
Yeah, you do.
You had a couple seconds, but that's okay.
Yeah, that was well done.
I mean, for a first, what's going on? For a first 3-point stance, pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah,
right.
And
Hauser. So on the table, it is an all-time managerial matchup with respect to Red Sox fans, Cora and Tito tonight. Some dark horse honors for us, for Patriots players from NFL.com. And then the idea of Sam Hauser. So I want to start there as Justin Turpin is our guest here on this segment. You mentioned the numbers with Jason Tatum and Sam Hauser and how they play together when they're together in the lineup. So how does a Sam Hauser role change, grow, develop in a Tatum-less offense, in your estimation?
I think for the most part, it stays the same. I mean, it's going to be a little bit different for everybody in the offense. They're going to play faster, and Brad Stevens made that clear after the draft in his draft night presser, and I think mm-hmm. Jaylen Brown at the helm of the offense is automatically going to make them a faster team, so he's going to have to adjust to that. But he can play in transition, and he can be what happened.
He said, I'm nodding approval.
You okay, say okay, faster, yeah. He's nodding approval. Right. I doubt that means better.
Yeah.
Definitely faster.
But this is, everyone's looking at this year as a gap year for Jason Tatum, right? Like, they want to build the roster for when Tatum's back.
Yeah.
Looking at guys like Niang and, in particular, Anthony Simons, it's going to be tough to extend Simons anyway. He's making close to $27 million this year, and that extension's probably going to be in the same ballpark.
Ooh.
They just... they just parted ways with Drew Holiday, who was making close to 30. So wouldn't you have rather just kept Drew Holiday if that was the case, if you were just going to cut salary and extend him to the same thing? So
a little younger, but
a little bit younger. And I think
he'll score more. I think that I think if they're going to hold on to Simons, though, Terp, it feels like they're going to hold on to him because they're going to need more speed and more offense on the floor. But Simons, basically, it feels like you're posturing that moving on from Simons makes more sense because Hauser is cheaper and very dependable. He's kind of an underrated your type of guy.
And more importantly, he fits great with Jason Tatum. And I think people also forget how good he was during the NBA Finals. Like, he played some of his best games during the NBA Finals, and that can't be overstated. So I think the Celtics should be looking to keep him more than they should be Simons, because it's already going to be tough to extend him, and you got Hauser under contract at a very reasonable number.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think for them is he fits their what they want to do, and he's cost-effective, so that really fits overall what they want to do right
now. Does Simons fit what they want to
do? Really. Well, I mean, he shoots threes. He wants to jack up threes. Like, no, I know. That's my point. But he also
already have what?
$30 million.
Yeah, you already have a guy that can shoot the three pretty well. And Hauser, do you need another one? And also, you don't even know what you have yet in my guy Shireman.
Also,
The
thing with Simons as well is a defensive backcourt with Peyton Pritchard, who is a decent defender for his size. He's always going to have natural limitations.
Right.
That's just the reality. Mm-hmm. Anthony Simons, I mean, some say he doesn't play a lick of defense.
He doesn't.
So you're going to have...
You know who some would be? His former team, I think.
Correct. So
you're going to have... And anyone that's watched him.
A defensive backcourt of those two for a team that really likes to pride itself defensively. Now, I think Joe Mazzulla could really help him grow in that regard on the defensive side of the ball. I think what he's done, Joe Mazzulla, to the defense has been criminally overlooked. I mean, he finished second, fourth in defensive rating in the 3 years that he's been here. And it also helps to have more talented players around you. I don't think, even at this current stage, I think people would take this Celtics roster over any roster he played with in Portland, specifically as it pertains to their defenders. So, yeah, you have better defenders around you. It's going to make you a better defender also.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm fine with keeping Hauser. I think long-term cost effectiveness, they're still going to jack up threes. It's not like they're going dramatically away from that world. Just, I agree with you, and I like your tone. With JB running the show, there's going to be a little different vibe to this team.
Hey, all right,
straight up said it.
Terp, so we got to get to the bottom of this. So Horford is a top target for the Warriors, apparently, and the Spurs are hot on Kornet. If you lose Horford and Kornet and you have traded away Porzingis, where's the size coming from on this team next year?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, which I would believe that's why a Simons trade would come in the near future. I mean, they have to get moving on this. Obviously, free agency opens tonight. Horford and Kornet are free to go wherever. Now, I think they would wait to see if the Celtics have an offer. They wouldn't just run off and, you know, sign right away, at least see what the Celtics can do. But they have to act quickly because other teams are going to be trying to. So they need to retain at least one of them. And both of them would be the dream for the Celtics. And Brad Stevens said that is their priority the other day. So, yeah, I mean, they need the size. You can't go into the season with just Xavier Tillman and Namish Keita. That cannot happen.
No, you cannot. Who's your preference, Andy, between Kornet and Horford? Who are you prioritizing? Because they're probably going to cost about the same.
I'm okay moving on for both, quite honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Where would the size come from?
That's where the genius, Brad. Everybody tells me he's the
biggest guy?
Genius ever.
Hugo Gonzalez. Or wait, what about Amari
Williams?
Williams, yeah.
He's a little bit more raw. That's why he was available so late in the draft.
Wait a minute. I heard, what's his name? Mike, who's the guy that did the press conference after day two of the draft?
Zenner. Mike Zarin. Oh, Mike Zarin.
Zarin. Yeah. And he's like, he's the best passer in college basketball. He's the best this. He's the best that. And I'm thinking, boy, this guy should have gone higher in the draft if he's as good as 50s.
I know.
Which also could play into them playing faster. You have a passing big. And, you know, I will give you a stat on Amari Williams.
Love
pretty interesting.
Who doesn't
115 assists last year, is tied for the Kentucky League, most ever by a 7-footer at Kentucky.
Come on now.
This style of basketball where you have a big leading your team in assists, I'm in on.
You know who's also a great
Jaylen
passer?
Jaylen Brown throwing the ball all over the court. Hauser,
no, you know what that tells me? Outlet passes, he rebounds, he gets it out, and we get a dunk 3 steps later for JB. 4-2.
Celtics only trail by 19 at the half.
That's a problem, and that's a possibility. I acknowledge that possibility. They could be more enjoyable to watch lose.
In defeat, yes.
Luke Kornet, also an excellent passer, specifically out of the short role. So
you've got me a little bit excited about Celtics basketball.
I think I'm going to let Horford go. I think I'm going to trade Simons. I'm going to keep Kornet, and then I'm going to use the rest of that money on... Is there a discount guard or like a small wing that we could add to the mix for that for the money that's left?
This will still be a destination, I think. Like, it's a gap year, and they're still going to be pretty good in this gap year. Like,
people
they're
going to
make the playoffs.
Hesitant,
it's hard to miss the postseason in the NBA. So many teams make it, and this team still has. I mean, look at, like, in the last 2 years, all their starting five, granted three of them will be gone, were centered all-stars, right? Like, Derek on the fringe, Jaylen Brown and Derek White. Right? Those guys are all stepping up a notch now. They're all taking a step forward. Like, as much as people are talking about Jalen as the one, what does Derek White look like as a two? Like,
I'm concerned.
I think he's totally capable of it.
I'm a bigger fan of his.
I think one of the hardest things to do in any sport is go to, you call on me occasionally to have a big game, and then, oh, you call on me every night to have a big game? That is a big leap.
There's going
to
be a learning curve.
He has to score 20 points a game.
Probably right
around. It's like when you ask a number two receiver, who always works well because the number one receiver gets most of the top cornerback. Now, all of a sudden, as a two receiver, I have to deal with the top corner and all those.
And I like Derek White. I do think he's become a little bit overrated. That was one of my 3-point stances last week when we were talking about Brown and White in the same conversation of these crazy packages. Yeah. I'm like, those two guys aren't the same. Why are we suddenly like lumping them together like you have two marquee players up for trade?
Another one I want to look at is Peyton Pritchard. Like, every time that guy's been given an extended opportunity, he's made the most of it.
He does. Every he maximizes his ops.
As long as he doesn't play the match.
We'll see if he's in the starting lineup next year. Obviously, there's still more moves to come. I think if Simons does stay, which I'd really put it like a 5 to 10% chance, I really do not see
him. Oh, that low?
Yeah, I do not see him.
You think he's on the way out?
He's on the way out.
Yeah, they haven't even finalized his deal yet, right?
Yeah, right. And again, well, that's because they have to wait until...
What, new league year?
July 6th. Oh. Yeah, so they have to wait another week till it could be final. But
who do you think, this is fun having someone in to talk a little extra hoops with. Who do you think has improved themselves the most thus far?
Thus far?
Yeah.
Around the league?
Yeah.
Or in the East? Houston. Definitely.
See, Andy hates the KD trade.
That's just because I hate KD. I think KD makes every team he's on work.
They needed a big voice in that room, somebody that's been there and done that.
Yeah, Ime.
Young team. Ime, and he's doing a great job.
I think Ime and KD are going to butt heads.
I think they're going to work well together.
I mean, they already worked well together. Well,
the under.
Really well, but KD played well when they were in Brooklyn together.
And what about in the East? The Magic were already scrappy enough. Yeah. And now adding Bane, like
three Rex.
Now they, yeah.
I love that. I love the Desmond Bane trade. Yeah. I think that team is already going to make noise. They're a young team, and they were banged up last year. I maintain when the Celtics were playing them in the playoffs last year, that had they not been riddled by injuries, they would have finished way better than what their regular season record shown. So I think they were better than what they might have shown on the surface last year.
For sure.
All right, Terp, thanks for stopping by for 3-point stance. Next time, remember, you don't need to freak out when you hear that. As Fitzy said, Ted just plows right through the buzzer sometimes. So just ignore the buzzer.
It is intimidating, though. It takes a little while to get used
Absolutely.
To it.
Like, if Ted doesn't like the outcome of the game, he used to stay on the field until he got the
We also learned don't ever go on Jeopardy, because apparently if you made it to Final Jeopardy, you would freak F out and not have an answer, and you'd lose everything that you wager.
When the people, I watched that Family Feud, like the end. When
yes,
like,
you would freak out.
No, I'd be, I would be.
Or at least you need to practice more. Practice.
Yeah. Sources that relate to me that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not pleased with the Bucks' decision to buy out Damian Lillard for the remainder of his contract, and he just didn't like how it was handled. And so, you know, Giannis, this whole offseason, since this season ended, he's been, you know, weighing his options and trying to figure out what he is going to do, trying to navigate his future. And you know, this is just one more thing added to the equation in which he's seeing that there are some, you know, suspect things happening, or the way that they are happening. And so I was told that he is not pleased with what transpired with Damian Lillard.
Hour 2, Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Mego in for Keefe today. And a reminder, you can stream WEEI anytime on the Odyssey app, as well as the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. Lots of ways to listen to Jones and Keefe each and every day here on WEEI. That was Chris Haynes. We mentioned that yesterday. Wide open Eastern Conference, it seems. I think that's damage control from Giannis and his camp to a friendly media member to let you know that he wasn't the guy stabbing Damian Lillard in the back on the way out the door. I can't imagine the Bucks, and I know what Chris Haynes said there, and it wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong again. But I can't imagine the Bucks, knowing the situation they're in with Giannis, going, hey, we're going to waive Damian Lillard, we're going to bring in Miles Turner, and Giannis is going to know nothing about it. Like, I can't bring myself to believe that.
Especially because there hasn't been more that's come out. Like, if Giannis was really upset about this, if he was really left in the dark, wouldn't there be more than just one report out there? I know Chris Haynes is really close to Giannis and close to Dame Lillard, but wouldn't there be a little bit more? Like, if they did something where he was completely out of the loop,
and it was enough that he was, or when he was on the fence about asking for a trade, I just think that there would be a little something else there.
Yeah, and it ties in with the Celtics as well, because they have interest, they've shown interest, quote-unquote, according to The Athletic, in Damian Lillard. I would be out on the signing. Who knows what he's going to have left in the tank, too? Like, I've said before, Tatum's not going to be the same player when he comes back from the Achilles injury. Now, that doesn't mean he'll be a bad player. That doesn't mean he can't play.
I don't really like hearing that from you.
Okay, but for a guy who was a perennial first-team All-NBA player, I bet he never makes first team again. He was never a true MVP candidate. He'll never win an MVP. That doesn't mean he can't be All-NBA and make All-Star teams. He can do those things. But, and that's in a best-case scenario, by the way, I think. He's an approximation of the same player, but he'll never be the same player. Lillard may never be able to play again. Like, you look at some of the guys who had these Achilles injuries. DeMarcus Cousins was a big, and it fell off a cliff. I'm trying to remember some of the guards. We went through all these at the time.
Yeah.
Like, a guard in their 30s off an Achilles injury, they're probably cooked. Well,
wasn't Dominique All-NBA first team again?
So he, no, I don't believe he ever made the same level post-injury. And he was gone in Atlanta and started bouncing around after that. And so, I mean, he eventually was here. Like, his career ended pretty quickly. He came back from the injury in less than a year and played at a high level, though. That's true. But no, I don't believe he ever achieved what he had pre-injury. I don't think. When we went through all these before. Yeah, if you could. So, if Dominique is the one exception to the rule, then show it to me. But most players never were the same player again. But I would expect Tatum to come back. He's young enough.
He was All-NBA second team that year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Tatum might be, if he was
the year after he came back from his, when the year he came back from his Achilles injury, he was All-NBA second team.
But this is what I'm telling you. If Tatum was a top five player.
It was like, also in the early 90s.
Durant's another great example. Like, Durant, I don't think has ever made a first team again after his Achilles injury. He's been second team. He's made a million All-Star teams. He's come back and largely been the same player, but he was an MVP candidate before. So if Tatum was a top five player, he's now going to be a top 10 or 15 player. That doesn't make him bad.
The huge outlier with Tatum is the age. And so it'll be, in a morbid way, it'll be interesting to see both him and Tyrese Halliburton. You get a little more idea of if this is something we're going to continue to see from more NBA players where they're having these bizarre Achilles tears in their mid-20s in truly their prime. Like, is it going to be a different situation for Achilles injuries?
We were talking about this off the air. The idea, and this is a couple of days ago, there was a study that was put out, was it the University of Delaware?
Yes.
About all the Achilles injuries that have popped up in the NBA. And basically, the way I read it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way I read it was they've perfected a way to make athletes more explosive by working their upper legs, quads. But now you would hear this all the time. You can't just work out your biceps. You don't want to turn into a crab person. You need balance, right?
Right. Everything's connected to everything.
And so basically the lower legs, they're not working the same way that they're training their upper legs. You don't buy that?
As a Maryland person.
That was part of the study.
See, this is coming from Delaware. I don't know. It's like, if we knew that, could we have, has this study just been discovered? Could you have figured this out before the NBA playoffs?
Well, there wasn't a rash of these injuries.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, I would have to know a little bit about how long that study went on. If that's the reason, then it would be great to have one thing to point at and say the way that you're training these athletes is almost directly leading to these injuries. It just is hardly ever that way. I mean, they're still trying to figure out why some people tear their ACLs more than other people.
Tom in North Providence said it never happened to basketball players in the 80s and 90s. I mean, not technically true, but I agree. There's more present day than there were then. But Dominique would be an example of a player it happened to. They all wore high-top sneakers. Today, they all wear tennis shoes.
To me, the easiest explanation is probably just the level of strenuous play that these guys have earlier in their careers. Like, the amount of minutes from AAU on that they play.
Well, and Tatum and Halliburton played so much for Team USA. Oh, wait, they both sat the bench for Team USA.
Okay, but they both were they both had extreme minutes for prior seasons in the NBA.
Sure. A lot of guys play a lot of minutes in the NBA.
I don't know if anybody played as many minutes overall as Tatum when it comes to also an entire championship run.
Maybe not. I mean, I don't know.
I think in the past few years, Tatum has the most minutes total.
Yeah, Luka played a million minutes for Dallas on an NBA Finals run and then turned around and played.
Luka's Achilles, is made out of hamburgers. So he's a different situation completely.
I was telling you, that's a guy who plays a lot of minutes.
He's got Big Macs in both ankles. And that's a good thing. I'm not saying that disparagingly. That's a nice thing for him.
Yeah, he works out his upper and lower legs equally. He does not work them out. Text line 617-779-7937. Guys, would they have to take on the entire Lillard contract? No, they would not.
That's the point of taking it.
The Bucks waived him. They're stretching out that that contract over 5 years. And so you still got to win a bidding war to get him. Like, if you're lined up against three other teams and you're offering the least amount of money, he probably won't take you. But you don't have to inherit the Bucks contract. No, that's not the case.
I think it would be nice, though, if they were like rehab buddies, Tatum and Lillard, and they would just like, you know, maybe they'd like start a YouTube series together or something.
That would be a good thing to do. Another text here. Guys, if the Celtics sneak into the seventh or eighth seed, is it possible Tatum will be ready to go late next year? Are you banking on a Tatum return?
I really don't like that idea at all. I'd rather just give him the entire year. I know, and you know me, I get into mama bear mode, and I think that he already seems, if you follow him on Twitter, like so frustrated by the process of how long this rehab is going to be anyway. He's going to be chomping at the bit to come back.
He's never had to rehab anything, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, well, I think he's going to be chomping at the bit to come back.
I would say welcome to how most other...
Jays. Yeah. and in a big way, it's going to be the responsibility of the Celtics organization to make sure that he's making the smartest move.
I would just say, I mean, to Tatum, I understand he's frustrated, but like, welcome to how the rest of the professional athletes live. Like, you've been very fortunate you haven't had to rehab anything at age 27 or whatever he is. Like, he's been exceptionally fortunate. He hasn't had to do that, and that probably speaks to
is that responsibility?
Well, I definitely think it's a blend. I mean, there's some
luck
involved.
Not everybody is born with hamburger Achilles.
That's true. But like, okay, welcome to how everybody else has to live, Tatum, including a bunch of your teammates you've played with over the years. A lot of guys have to rehab injuries, so he has been fortunate in that way, but some of that is the shape he keeps him in and the training he does, et cetera. I'll acknowledge that. That segues into, and I'm with you, I would not rush Tatum back this year. It sounds like they're already punting on the year almost entirely. They're ready to dip below the luxury tax.
They won't even begin talking about timelines, and I think that's fine. Like, look, as much as anybody else, I would love the idea of Tatum coming back and leading them back to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he looks mostly himself. Like, what a dream. I just don't really think that's reality. And when you look at the long term for a player who just started a Supermax deal, you just want him to get healthy and however long that takes.
Yeah, I mean, I would not bring him back. If the team's playing well without him, I wouldn't bring him back for a playoff push anyways. Now, the seventh or eighth seed, maybe there's more of a gray area in my mind where it's like, could Tatum really elevate the team? Let's say they're the fourth seed on pace for 50 wins without him. I wouldn't screw with it. I'd let Jaylen keep leading the team.
I'd say get on that Durant timeline. You take all your time. Take all the time.
Yeah, and what did he end up missing? I mean, it was like
Durant had the longest one.
Like 600
COVID.
Days, 700 days. Yeah, something like that.
So maybe not quite that long. I'm not wanting 2 years, but longer than, hey, let's get you back in April.
No, but an off season, a season, and then another off season, or you know, before he's actually playing in NBA games again, that would probably be the best way to get him back closest to what he was pre-injury. Which, by the way, based on the track record with these guys, he's never going to be again.
Did you just stop saying that?
Well,
I don't like that.
Well, it's true.
You don't know. You don't know.
No, I don't. That's why I said based on the track record. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's the exception to the rule. But like even Durant, again, people champion Durant. And if he comes back the way Durant did, that's great. But Durant's never been the same guy. He's never been an MVP candidate, first team All-NBA guy again. He hasn't. So he went from being like the best or second best player in the league to still a top 10, 15 player in the league. Now more like a top 20 player in the league. I don't know where he'd rank. That's what I'm talking about with
Tatum.
So
if Tatum goes from being a top 3 to top 5 player to a top 10 player.
Yeah, it's still really good.
That's still remarkable.
But it's not the same.
Stop it. Stop yeah. saying that.
No, but acknowledge that that's true. If he goes from being the third player in the league to the 10th player.
Because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Okay. And I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. Maybe because I'm following on Instagram and he's out there in the Auerbach Center like every day. He's meeting the young guys yesterday, dapping them up.
He should be.
And he's showing, you know, that he's working out the rest of his body.
I'm with you. I would not him.
People are going into a holiday weekend, and you're just like throwing cold water.
In fairness, I did this right when the injury started.
It's horrible. That was your reaction.
Well, yeah, I looked at the Achilles. It's not an ACL. It's an Achilles. It has a horrible track record. The injury, it's a terrible, terrible injury.
It is a terrible injury. Yeah. Thanks for bringing all this back
up. Okay, but that's what we're talking about Tatum. That's a big factor in talking about Tatum, no?
The comeback is going to be greater than the setback, okay?
Well, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. So looking at the East, Mega,
What is it about my presence here that brings out this side of you?
I was doing this with Keefe. It's not just that. The East feels wide open. You look around at what other teams have done. I guess I kind of like what the Bucks have done, assuming that the Giannis thing is a ruse. It's not just they've actually pissed off Giannis and now he's gone. Then they screwed up royally. But I kind of like what the Bucks have done. I don't know. Do you look at anybody else? I mean, Atlanta, I guess, has improved their team.
Yeah, I like the Hawks.
Okay. So
I think the Hawks have gotten significantly better.
Who else has reasonably gotten better? And who else?
Cavs.
Who else is to where? You think the Cavs got better?
You don't?
Not really. I mean, Darius Garland's going to miss time. They lost Ty Jerome. Who'd they bring in?
Where did Dorian Finney-Smith go?
Finney-Smith went to the Rockets, I thought.
Yeah, the Rockets are having the best one.
So they're having a great offseason. That's out West, though. Like, I'm not worried about the Western Conference teams, at least not right now. If they're in a position where they're worried about who they're facing in the NBA Finals, then they had themselves a great year. I'm focused on the East right now. I kind of like what the Bucks did. Orlando getting Desmond Bane is a good move, but I don't think that's like a game changer. Atlanta got a little better. I really don't think the rest of the East is appreciably better.
And Larry Nance Jr. I knew it was
That was the big ticket move?
That's who I wanted the Celtics to bring on if they're not going to go for Mo Wagner, and I don't think they are, but they can't afford any of these guys right now with what they're trying to do.
So look, Philly should be better. Terp mentioned this to me after the show. Philly should be better. Embiid might be overrated. I like Tyrese Maxey. No one really likes Paul George, but Philly's going to be a way better team than they were a year ago, assuming anything approaching health. I do think that Milwaukee's better. Indiana's way worse. No Halliburton. They lost Miles Turner. They're going to be way worse than the Celtics.
New York still doesn't have a coach.
New York doesn't have a coach, but I think they're I would say
they're the number one seed right now?
Them or Cleveland, I think, are the two safest teams
to
look at.
You said you didn't like Larry Nance Jr. to Cleveland.
No, I just said I didn't think they were better than a year ago, but they're probably still better than the Celtics. I'll give them that.
Overall,
they won
East,
64 games last year.
Overall, the East is certainly worse than it was the last 2 years, and not just because of where the Celtics are.
So I still think the Celtics have a real shot to be in the mix in the East, and what that means is host a round to start the postseason, a top four seed. I still think they're right there in the mix for that. Now, if they keep peeling pieces off and they're below the luxury tax, I'll reset. If they don't have any solution in the front court, I'm still giving them the benefit of the doubt. They'll bring in somebody, not named Minot or Garza, in the front court. Let's see who that is. But you need someone representative in the front court. I still think they can be there. I know you feel differently, though.
I think that they're a little bit lower than that. I think being a four seed would be everything completely goes your way. Everybody stays healthy. Jaylen Brown plays close to his all NBA season. And I think that's a lot to ask for what the way that they're setting this up. I also think it's just going to be you're going to be having players, at least the where you stand right now, that don't exactly fit into what Missoula's play style has been. And so I wonder what the adjustment's going to be there. If you look at, for example, if you sit here today and Nemias Keita is your starting center, Nemias Keita doesn't shoot threes.
Nope.
Like, he simply doesn't shoot threes.
Yeah, good.
And that's the cornerstone of Missoula's offense. So does that mean that Missoula's offense changes around Nemias Keita, or do you ask him to change his playing style?
Well, no. I would hope for neither of those things. Like, I wouldn't change the offense because of Nemias Keita, and I wouldn't ask him to start launching threes.
Do you
threes.
Like Nemias Keita?
If he's in your rotation, fine. He probably shouldn't be starting. So, but they need to adjust how they play, right? And if some of that is forced because Tatum's on the sideline, and that's not just launching threes, Mego, but I would look at ceasing to start the offense with Tatum. And you're not going to be able to do that this year. I wouldn't have Jaylen Brown initiate the offense. Now, who does that is a fair question. You know, do I do more of that with Derek White? Could Simons do that? If Simons isn't here and Pritchard's in the starting lineup, could he do that? One thing I liked about Indiana and their offense, and Tyrese Halliburton and players of that ilk aren't easy to find, but the way the ball moved, the back cutting, you know, and then that trickles down to cutting into just spacing the floor and launching threes. The whole offense shouldn't be Tatum trying to draw a double team and kicking to an open shooter. Like, you need more to your offense than that. And this year is a way to experiment with that. And so I wouldn't change the offense because Keita can't shoot threes. I changed the offense because it didn't work last year. Tatum's not here. and it's a good opportunity to try to do something different that clearly wasn't working come playoff time last year.
I also think it'll be interesting when you get into the regular season with this team, because this is a team that for stretches didn't even run plays on offense. You know, they'd kind of run a set here or there. I think it's just by necessity going to have to be really different because you don't have the level of playmakers out there with Tatum out and now Drew gone and Porzingis gone, where you can say, hey, let's just kind of freelance here and see what happens. So I think the offense is going to look really different. And if you hated the offense of the last 2 years, which was hyper-productive, then maybe that's a good thing for you as a watcher.
Text line 617-779-7937. I trust Brad Stevens. They're the best Boston team, or the best bet for a Boston team to get back to the playoffs. Not worried about them compared to the other Boston professional teams. I don't know why we needed that qualifier.
So I
think we're about to find out how good of a GM Brad really is. I'm not saying he's a bad one, but he hasn't been told no much, right, on any of these moves. Now, Derek White was a highly creative deal, way better player than I thought. You know, his ability to bring in Drew Holiday and add him to a championship-caliber team and some of the manipulation they had with the luxury tax and the aprons, great. But he wasn't told no a lot, you know. Wick was writing dad checks that his dad was ultimately going to cash or couldn't cash to the point where they had to sell the team. He wasn't told no a lot. Now it feels like there's more restrictions. I think we're going to find out a little bit more about Brad Stevens, because if he figures out a way to make creative moves to keep this team competitive without Tatum, Porzingis, Holiday, well, he's going to deserve all the credit he gets. If not, we might start looking at him a little bit differently this season. Is that fair to say?
I think so, especially when you think about the kind of coach that Stevens was. Coming from college into the situation that he was in with the Celtics in a rebuild, Stevens thrived on those pre-Kyrie teams, like getting those teams to punch above their weight class. So I wonder if that's going to translate in any way to his position in the front office now, if it's going to be like he thrives on the challenge, because you can be a GM basically anywhere when you're saying we're going for the championship. We already have the pieces in place. We have the foundation set. We just need to tweak here and there. And I'm not saying it was like easy to make the decisions that he made, but it was easier than the position he's in now. So, yeah, I do think that this is going to be a test for him. But maybe some of the character that we saw of him on the sidelines will translate to the front office.
Yeah, again, I don't mean to say that he's a bad GM by any means, but if you think he's the best or second best GM, him and Sam Presti, do we look at him as more like a top 10 GM? Do we look at him and question that more coming out of the year? Because it's really the first time as an executive he's had limits and been told no. And I think we're going to find something out.